I'm Bianca Daly and welcome to the Wholesome Women Podcast, where you will experience inspiration, guidance and knowledge from myself and the incredible guests that I invite to my show. A little about me, I'm the founder of Bianca Daly Health, Wellness and Lifestyle in Perth, Australia. I'm a certified Czech holistic lifestyle coach and I have a background in counselling. I combine these two approaches to help my clients achieve optimal health and wellness. I primarily work with women and through a comprehensive assessment process, I help them identify the root cause of their symptoms. I then guide and support my clients through an individualized coaching program to address any imbalances in the body and in turn to achieve their goals and reach optimal health. I pay particular attention to nutrition, movement, stress management, mind and lifestyle habits as a way of healing the body and preventing disease. I truly believe that my life purpose is to educate, inspire, support and coach women to take control of their health and heal their body. And it is this that I aspire to do for women every single day. I have created the Wholesome Women Podcast for you to help educate you, inspire you and support you on your own unique journey towards greater health and wellness. Welcome to the Wholesome Women Podcast. This is episode number one. Today is so exciting. We're talking with Simon from Our Conscious Kitchen, who has a wealth of knowledge and experience in the health field. How are you, Simon?
Oh, I'm fantastic, Bianca. Thank you. And I'm honoured to be on your very first podcast. So good to be here.
Excellent. Could you tell us how your interest in health began and a little about your Conscious Kitchen?
Yeah, sure. Not a problem. So my journey with food and health began at a very, very early age. I was very fortunate to have a father and one of my older cousins who were both chefs, and they're whole food chefs, and my family's Sicilian. So I have a lot of these memories of growing up, being taken to the market and shown how to pick, you know, food that's in season and how to prepare it in a way where you weren't denaturing it. And basically, it was all just about using whole foods. There's no synthetics, no artificial flavor. There's no refined sugars, none of those things. It was always shown to me from a young age that that's not food, you know. And another thing that came from that is the importance of creating an environment where you can share that food with people. You know, that was just as important as the food itself. So the ceremony of food and the culture that came with that, creating a holistic food culture where you could share with people that you love. Or if you're even eating it by yourself, you know, do it in a way where you're not rushing. You can sit down, you can take some time to really enjoy the meal. So when I became old enough to start working, I naturally wanted to become a chef. So I did the traditional training. I went through college and I started to work. You know, I hit the ground running and I just became so passionate that I focused on nothing else but food. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but when you're so focused on something and it's almost like nothing exists but that, that was kind of the way I was living. I was working about 100 hours a week as a chef in fine dining. And I went through some cafes and then I started working in weddings and functions and then more in fine dining. And naturally what happened was my work-life balance started to become really tilted towards being not very supportive towards health. And around about the age of 22, 23, I had quite a challenging health crisis. And I had to go to the medical establishment. I had some issues with I was having irritable bowel syndrome, but really bad cramps where I couldn't sleep at night. I was having chronic anxiety. And then when you throw them all together, it just becomes really, really challenging to kind of function. And not being exposed to any of these, I was finding it very tough. So I went to the medical establishment and through a series of tests and things like this, you know, I got diagnosed with rare diseases and I had little operations and I had to go see specialists. And what I found was through that process, I started to become very negatively focused through what I was hearing from all the specialists and doctors. And I found that the approach that they were taking was very anti. They were always pointing out the things that I shouldn't be doing, and they were looking for all the things that were wrong with me, and they were cutting out all these bits of my body and taking these examples and trying to find out what was wrong and trying to get me on medicines and things to fix it. And after about a year of this, after going through what I call a downward spiral, I had someone who I looked up to, a very wise person in my life. It was actually my cousin, who was an amazing chef, but also he was very spiritual. He practiced yoga a lot. He was an amazing kung fu martial artist. And he was just a very zen, very solid kind of guy. And he said to me on the phone, he just said, I heard about my challenges, and I was just telling him how hard life was at that time. And he just said to me, he's like, Simon, the body can't exist without the mind. And something about that, when he said that to me, just rang clear, rang true. And it gave me something to hold on to, because I kind of felt like my body had turned on me and I was trying to find this way to fix it. But when he said that, I kind of realized that I actually had the power to take care of myself. So I started looking into ways to bring that balance back through the mind, and led me down a path of natural therapies and natural healings and meditation. And I studied Chinese medicine and became a kinesiologist and started practicing as a kinesiologist after my life. You know, after I kind of gained control of my life and realized that I had this power again and that I was creating the situation. So getting back to the food, it'll make sense. It all comes full circle. Because after practicing with clients through Chinese medicine and then started practicing through kinesiology, I found that, you know, 99% of these issues that people were coming to have cleared up, whether it was pains or, you know, mental, emotional issues or physical issues, they generally stem from an emotional imbalance or a mental imbalance, something to do with the way they were perceiving things that was creating an imbalance in the way that they were experiencing their life. And they would come in, they would have some sessions, they would go home, they would feel good. But what I found 99% of the time of that was what they were eating was the trigger, or what they were eating would either support them to move forward towards a space of health, or it would relapse them into a space of disease or disharmony. So I started to realize that this love of food that I always had served a great purpose in helping people heal and helping people take control of their lives. So I started to do a lot more in-depth work with food, especially with people. Started to see how people could use food as a way they could empower themselves to take control of their health in most cases, because I feel that what I was taught, especially when I was studying at college and even through university, I studied science and certain things, was what I was taught about food was not necessarily what I was experiencing in the realms of health food. What I was told was healthy was, you know, it was all about calorie counting and avoiding fats and all these things. And I found my experience was completely different. And when I started to share this with people in my life and then started to share it with my clients, they were having great results as well. So I started to realize that maybe what we've been taught isn't always the truth, and maybe there's a lot of there's room to grow there, and there's a lot to be said for personal experience. So that's led me to where I am today with Your Conscious Kitchen and my coaching and the work that I do with food, is helping people to empower themselves through understanding what real food is and how they can create a realistic, conscious food culture that can help support them to be the best that they want to be in life. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Answer. Yeah, and it sounds like you growing up, you know, it was all about the food, and this aspect of the power of the mind was something that you experienced yourself just through going through your own health challenges, and that was sort of something that was new. And obviously you found the benefit in focusing on that area of your life to get you to the health that you needed or that you wanted.
Yeah, that's very well said. That's exactly what I experienced. What I realized was that, and it was a very tangible experience for me. I was always very sensitive to foods, but what I noticed was certain foods would trigger me to either feel good or feel not so good, or make me feel a little bit scatty, or maybe that would affect the way I was sleeping. And my experiences with that first began with coffee, of course. I was drinking a lot of coffee, and I would notice that if I drank coffee, then I would obviously feel a little bit edgy and I wasn't as calm and collective as usual. But then I noticed I wouldn't sleep as well, or I'd get to sleep later. And then I would start having sugar cravings. And this is what happens with the coffee culture, is you drink your coffee to get your energy going. You get a real big rush of energy, but then it crashes you. So then you need something to get you back up there. So you have more caffeine or you have sugar. And what this does over time is it wears down the adrenals and it depletes you, but it also wears down the mind, because you're constantly going in the state of high excitement and down crashing. You're very rarely in this middle, beautiful, balanced state of clarity and calm. So that was my first experience of noticing how a substance that I was taking into my body, it could affect the way that I was thinking and feeling. And then as I started to get more involved, I started to notice this with all different foods. I started to notice it with sugar intake. I started to notice it with gluten and foods that would weren't so easy to digest. I started to notice it with artificial foods, artificial flavors and sweeteners and colors. And we all know that a lot of these things are connected to a lot of behavioral problems in children. So it makes me think, and I always like to share this, you know, imagine if there were no artificial foods or there weren't these stimulants and refined foods out there, but potentially all these behavioral problems that we have with children, even adults, maybe they won't exist.
And imagine what it would be like if we all, you know, grew up and it was something that you're even taught in school to become self-aware, you know, because so many people go through life and yes, they have symptoms and they're aware of those. But if you could even, you know, tap into what your body's telling you before that happens, you know, if you're feeling a little bit uncomfortable after certain foods or like you said, your energy levels change, then you know, so many of the diseases out there now could be avoided, but unfortunately it's just not something that anyone's really taught until you go through an experience yourself and you need to do it.
Yeah. I think it's so important too. There's quite a few important points you just touched on there. I'd like to kind of just delve into a couple of them really quickly, but I think that it's really important to realize that, you know, we are taught from a mental perspective through our schooling system. It's, you know, sit in this seat, here's the information. It's rote learning. It's a type of learning. You know, it's not wrong, but it's one specific type of learning, and it's rote learning. It's, this is the information, and I'm going to repeat it until you remember it. When you can repeat it back to me, then you're right, and you move on to the next level. Whereas there's another type of learning, which is through observation. You know, and this is how, you know, this is how animals learn to live in the wild with their parents. They observe, they sit there with their parents and watch them hunt and how they deal with the environment and certain situations and tribes and different older cultures and things like that. And even in modern day society, this is how children learn off their parents. The neurology matches exactly what the parents are doing, even if they're not talking at that time. So if you've got some emotional patterns, say if you've got you know, if you're a messy person around the house, but you're constantly telling your child, oh, you know, clean your room, but they don't, and then you get frustrated, then you need to start looking at yourself, because the children don't even have the choice whether or not they want to do it or not. Their neurology up until a certain age will always mirror the parents. So what's happening in the schooling system is that we feel a certain way. And we might be, for instance, in my experience, drinking coffee. I was drinking coffee and I knew it wasn't good for me for a certain period of time. But everywhere I looked and every doctor I spoke to or even nutritionist and even psychologist, I saw a psychologist when I was having my anxiety, I mentioned this thing about the coffee. And none of them had any information in their database that they'd been taught to say that coffee was bad for you. All they could say was, oh, well, it's a bit stimulating, and but it's high in antioxidants, because it's the information that had been passed down. So because I listened to that, I was coming from a headspace, it took me longer than I could have to actually give up the coffee, because my personal experience was telling me that coffee's not good for me. And it wasn't until I came across Chinese medicine that I realized that coffee has a really big impact on the adrenals and the kidneys, which are pretty much the storehouse of our life energy and our life force. And then once I heard that information, I was like, oh my God, that's what I've been feeling, and that's what I've been observing in people. But the dogma of modern day medicine and nutrition at that stage, you know, 5-10 years ago, I couldn't find the information out there to confirm what I was experiencing. So this is why I think it's so important for us to start to develop our own self-awareness, like you said. You know, if we're taught from a young age to, not that this is good for you or this is bad for you, but when you eat this, notice how it makes you feel. You know, how does it feel in your mouth? How does it feel when you swallow it? How do you feel, you know, half an hour afterwards? Or, you know, do you sleep well? These sorts of things. And by tuning into that direct perception, all of a sudden you don't need to be told what's good for you and what's not. You can start to navigate your way around life safely and comfortably. And just quickly before I move on from that, you know, I always used to think it was funny where there's a lot of you know, I'm very much into plant medicines and natural medicines and wild foods. And I hear a lot of people say, like, well, how did they figure that out? There must have been a lot of trial and error. and all these types of things. But I think that when you're living in nature, or you're living in an environment where you know, your survival depends on being in tune with your own biorhythms and in tune with the environment around you, I think you quickly learn what is good for you and what's not. I don't think it's like today where it's where we don't know it's good for us, someone has to tell us. I think we intuitively know, oh, that looks like something I can eat. Let me taste it. Yes, that has the characteristics of something that's good for me. And then they take it. So that's what I think we're trying to move back towards. That's what I would like to move back towards.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's so much we could talk about today, and you've already touched on a few that I want to sort of delve into a little bit further. Sure. Healing with whole foods is one. So, I mean, we could talk about this all day, and, you know, it's a big passion of mine, how quality food and nutrition can provide the body with energy and the vitality to self-heal. I've experienced the healing benefits of nutrition over the years, also in my own life, similar to yours. You know, I've had my own health challenges and had to become really self-aware and understand my own body and what it's needing to heal and to get me to where I wanted to go. And I continually see this with my clients as well. It's interesting how many people are actually unaware of the power of whole foods as well, and also how nutrition plays such a really big part in, you know, turning people's lives around for the better. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. Well, look, from my experience, you know, I think when you start looking at holistic health or holistic nutrition, that we've got to understand that in the world of science and the world of nutrition itself, you know, they definitely have their place, and there's lots of amazing advancements in health and the way that we understand the human body and food through them. However, they're only looking at a very narrow spectrum of what actually exists in the world. You know, for instance, you know, an apple has thousands of different compounds, and nutritional compounds that are inside, but we can only identify a handful of them. You know, so then we think that that's what's there, but there are so many things that are actually active within an apple. For instance, you know, there's a form of studying. It's called biophotonic resonance. It's basically, it came out of Russia, I think it was mid last century. And what they studied was, they found that when they put people, living organisms or plants or leaves or fruits in a chamber that's completely dark, and they take photos of them with a specific type of camera, they found that these living organisms, so humans, bugs, plants, apples, all these things, gave off light. They emitted this blue light. It comes up as this blue light. It looks like an aura around these things. You may have seen these photos on the internet. If you don't, check out biophotons or biophotonic photography or Curlian photography. And so what they showed, that living organisms had this light emitting off them. And, you know, science agrees with this now, that there's a certain type of light wave energy and information that's given off between cells. And they found this is the same with food. So you'll put an apple under there, and then they'll take a photo of the apple. It has this amazing ray of energy coming off there. And then if they take something like an organic apple and put against something like a conventional apple, the conventional apple will have less life force, have less energy, less light coming off it. And then if they had a cooked apple, but they did it like with broccoli, raw broccoli, and then they did cooked broccoli, it showed that the cooked broccoli actually had less light emitting off it as well, almost like less than half. So the reason why I talk about that is this is just one example of the different energies that are involved in whole foods, that are involved in life itself. And just by looking at something through nutrition, it's a very small, narrow bandwidth of what food actually offers us. So when we're starting to deal with whole foods, we're starting to deal with fulfilling the body's needs on all levels. So there's things of, you know, like hydration. You know, we need to have hydration, we need to have water, we need to have electrolytes, you know, we need to have, you know, enzymes and energy and bacteria and all these things that come from food. So when you start comparing whole food to something like a supplement, you start to see that the supplement's only going to be offering the body a very, very small part of what it needs on the whole. And just excuse me, I have a noise coming from it. Yeah, I just moved.
Okay.
My apologies for that.
That's all right.
There we go. Sorry about that. Yeah, so, and in my experience and with the people that I work with, is when they start to embrace more whole foods in their life, generally they just start to feel better. And I think there's a lot of things that can't be explained with modern day science. And I think it's quite important to understand that maybe science will never be, will never get to the level where it can explain everything that's possibly happening. And if we continue to sit back and wait for something like science to come up with the evidence for everything that we need to call truth, all of a sudden science starts to become a dogma or even like a religion where it dictates the truths that we have in our life. And I think that's a bit of a dangerous place to start playing in. So if we start tuning into our own sense of well-being and notice that when we start to work with whole foods that we can start to heal, we don't need to have too many external sources telling us that this is what it's doing to you. You can feel it yourself. You have a direct perception. So just want to quickly touch on things like, in this case, for example, fasting. You know, fasting is a process where we actually eliminate food completely, or we eliminate a certain amount of food to allow our body to start to basically clean, detox, and rebuild itself on a cellular level, and even lower down to a subatomic level, but we'll just talk about the cellular level. And the way it does this is by eliminating the digestive process, or by actually slowing how much food down that we put into our digestive system, the body has these mechanisms where it's constantly trying to recreate balance and harmony within itself. It's like a self-replicating, self-balancing mechanism that's alive. And the reason why we get sick is we don't support that with enough nutrition and life-supporting principles and practices. So that's what we call deficiency. Or if we overload it with things that aren't good for it, that get in the way and inhibit that, it's called toxicity. So by going into a fasting process, we're actually cutting down the overloading process so the body can continue to go on and rebalance itself in the way that it needs to. So I think I've got a little bit off track there talking about how whole foods heal, but when you start to look into fasting in particular, you start to see that there's lots of evidence out there now, not just through personal experience, but even through the scientific community itself, that the body can heal from all sorts of things. You know, I've been on fasting experiences where people have gone in there with, you know, neurological issues, and they're in a wheelchair. And then after 7 days, they're pushing people around in the wheelchair just because they've trusted in the body's own innate ability to heal, but they've given themselves the support through nutrition, through juice fasting and those sorts of things to get them back on track. So I encourage people just to start to look in there, look out there and start to see how different ways of approaching whole foods, whether it is through fasting or just eating good quality food, can actually help the body to heal itself. And just to get clear on the fasting, there's many different ways of fasting. People think that it's just without going without food, but you can, you know, just by removing something like gluten or removing dairy and sugar and wheat and things that are a bit challenging in the digestive system, that's considered fasting as well. If you're just to go on a raw food diet, that's a type of fasting. You're basically abstaining from certain things that you have in your everyday life to support other functions to happen in the body. So if you're into something like fasting or healing with whole foods, you don't necessarily have to go to the extreme because the body is always going through that process. It's just how much we support that with what we eat or how much we interfere with that with what we eat and what we do.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up too, because all over, I think everyone, you know, all the listeners will probably be thinking, oh, that pops up on social media all the time, particularly if you do like, you know, if you, you know, follow health and wellness on social media. So, you know, you see like 7 day fasts come up and it's, you sort of look at it and you think, geez, am I supposed to do that? Or am I supposed to be off gluten or dairy? And I can imagine, well, I've been through it myself. You end up thinking, what the heck am I supposed to do? So it gets really confusing. But again, like we've already talked about, that's where the self-awareness comes in. And like you said, if you just go off gluten and you start to feel better, then obviously that's what your body needs. And you're healing by giving yourself all that nourishing nutrition in the meantime. But it's just everyone's individual and it just depends on what you're going through and what your body needs.
Yeah, that's right. And that's so important too. I think that you know, there is a lot of information out there about, you know, what to do and what other people are doing and what works and, you know, toxicity and fasting and cleansing and all these diets. And I'm not a big fan of any diet, and I think fasting can be used in the same way. It's like, oh, you have to fast, or I'm going raw, or I'm doing these things. And I think, you know, from my experience is that the more that we get caught up in the mind of what we need to do and what we think is right, we're playing back into that game of disempowering ourselves. I think when we get back into the body, the embodiment of what we feel that is naturally in harmony with our highest good and allows us to be the greatest expression of ourselves on all levels, that's when we start to really feel that empowerment, start to create a culture that supports us. And it's the same with fasting. You know, look, I love fasting. I think it's amazing. But it doesn't mean you have to do it. The body's always cleansing. The body is always eliminating toxins. The body's always rebuilding and regenerating its cells. It's always doing these things. So if you can just start to, basically, if you can just start to upgrade all your food in just to be natural and pure and the best quality you can get, you'll go through a detox process if you need to. If you're toxic, you'll start to detox. But in a slower, more safer environment, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people, I hear it all the time, how am I supposed to get out of my head and into my body? But, you know, like you said, when you start just incorporating good quality nutrition into your life, you're becoming more aware of what you're eating, and in turn you become more aware of, you know, everything else that's going on. So it is a process, and it takes practice, but, yeah, it's absolutely possible.
Yeah, it is completely possible, and it is just a practice, like you said. You know, look, we've been taught to think quite strongly. We're a very mind-dominant society. Information's passed down through words and through teachings. Not a lot of it's taught passed down through embodiment. You know, you very rarely get given something and like an apple and go, eat that. How does it feel? How do you feel? You know, we didn't get that. We just like, oh, eat apple. It's good for you. Why? Oh, because the doctor says one a day, you know, go to the doctor, you know, or, you know, eating fresh fruit's good. Okay, well, that's good. That's nice to know. But to be taught how to experience that on an embodied level is so important. And I feel that one thing that fasting is good for is to, it helps you differentiate the difference between what I call the superficial senses and what the body really needs. You know, the superficial senses are things like cravings. You know, for instance, like if I really feel like something sugary and I'm craving it, you know, you can, when you're in a fasting process, you can actually start to see if that's something that's coming from like a physical craving or if it's something that your body needs. And it's great because you're basically going without food altogether if you're in a true, you know, liquid fast. And you start to ask yourself, oh, I crave something sweet. But I know that I don't need something sweet. So what am I craving? Does that make sense? Like, I'm craving chocolate. I don't need chocolate to survive. So what am I craving? And what I find is that, what we find is that we're actually using food to either satiate some of our superficial senses, like our bodily cravings, or we're also using it to remedy emotional challenges that we have. So we can be going through life and we can have discomfort come up in the form of boredom, or discomfort come up in the form of depression, or discomfort come up in the form of confusion. And quite often people will reach out and remedy that with what's closest, like food. You know, for instance, they could eat chocolate, or they could even eat a banana or a smoothie. It doesn't have to be bad food. But the fact that they're not allowing themselves to sit with that rising emotion to gain the wisdom of what comes through sitting with the discomfort of an emotion, and they're remedying it or they're suppressing it with something that's going to give them an instantaneous fix, it goes to show that we can create addictions to food, whether it's health food or not. And by going through a fasting process, or even any kind of process with food where you're looking to consciously modify it, you start to differentiate between your emotional attachments, your physical cravings, and what your body truly needs. And I think that's probably the most important thing that we can learn from undergoing an evolution in our conscious food culture, is differentiating between those three different needs that we have. So keep mind on that next time you have something come up that's That's, for instance, if you have a craving come up or you have the need for something, you know, feel into it and just say, like, is this something that truly feels like it's going to nourish me, or is it something that's more of, you know, a stimulation or something that's going to entertain me for the moment, my senses? It's a very interesting practice.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we all go to food as an immediate sense of, you know, relief, I guess, rather than, like you said, just sitting there and asking yourself, what is it that you really need? And we've sort of talked about mindset or the mind, I guess, quite a lot already. But before I became a health, wellness and lifestyle coach, I worked as a counsellor for many years. And never in our training did we learn about the relationship between nutrition and mental health. This is actually one of the reasons I studied holistic health coaching, so that I could provide a whole mind-body approach with my clients and look at all aspects of their nutrition and lifestyle. And yeah, through my experience as a holistic health coach, I've learned so much already about how nutrition choices impact our mental health. And, you know, these days stress and anxiety and depression, it's all on the rise. And it's so important that we look at nutrition and the effect this is having on our clients' mindset and also on our own. Could you tell our listeners about how we can balance the mind with food?
Sure. Yeah. And I've had, you know, I had a lot of experience with this myself personally, and this is where I started to bridge the gap between what we eat and how we feel. And look, I think the first thing that we can do is, you know, start looking at what you're having on a regular basis and start to look at what the most natural, best quality alternative is. You know, look, I try to approach food and life with no dogmas, but there is a dogma, and I do believe that, and I believe we all have to have one dogma. At least we have to stand for something, and I believe that nature has its way. Nature knows the way, and it will always do what's needed to create balance. And if you just look at the planet and look at everything in nature, it's always doing that. And that's why I believe that it's no different for food. You know, it keeps us in sync with those natural forces. When you start bringing in synthetic foods or artificially created foods or refined foods, you start to create an imbalance, and then the body will do what it needs to do to rebalance itself, but it might shift you in one direction, if that makes any sense. So, for instance, if we have something that has high amounts of refined sugar, so, for instance, we eat a candy bar. Candy bar sounds like America. never use that word.
Yeah.
We eat something that has a lot of refined sugar, like an ice block or chocolate or something like that. Because in nature, it's really hard to find that concentration of sugar in any food, absent of all the water and all the electrolytes and all the vitamins and nutrients and pigments and electrical force and biophotons and all the things that would come with it in a perfect ratio and calories and all this stuff. Because to get that hit of sugar, it's very rare. It throws the body out of balance, and the body's like, oh, hang on. We just had an influx. So what we need to do is we need to boost up our insulin levels to help break it down, or we need to do other certain things to help process it, or, you know, it'll get pushed through the kidneys, and the kidneys got this huge overload to filter the blood and filter the urine more than it usually does. And then you feel that as a discomfort. You feel, oh, I don't feel right. Something feels wrong. And the problem with this is once you start to feel uncomfortable, then the mind gets involved. You're like, well, maybe something's wrong. You say, oh, and you start to think what could be wrong, and then you try and fix it. You might go to a doctor, or you might go to somebody else, and you start to play this head body game where you feel bad, you react to it with your mind, and you start to get stressed, or you don't feel good, or you think something's wrong, and then it can create a bit of a game that you have to play there. But so first and foremost, I think the best thing you can do is just try and have as much as your diet as possible as 100% natural, organic if you can. And if locally grown, biodynamic, if you can get those, then they're definitely the best quality, I believe. But if you can't, just natural food. Even if it's conventional, just get conventional natural foods from your local grocer. If they're not organic, you can actually wash them in apple cider vinegar and water. And spectral analysis have shown that they'll get conventional food. They'll test it. It's got chemicals all over it. They'll wash it in raw apple cider vinegar and a little bit of water in the sink. Just put some water, put some apple cider vinegar, give them a little rinse, and then they'll do the test again, and they've got no chemicals on them. So that's a really good way to just start to include whole real foods in your diet without having to worry about organics or not. if you can get organic, I believe it's better because then you don't have genetically modified foods and things like that. And if you can get locally grown and biodynamic, they're even better again because they're interacting with the local environment, and there's a lot to be said about eating foods from your local environment. As far as specific foods that help balance the mind and can actually throw the mind out, again, staying away from any refined foods. Sugar has a huge effect on the way that we think and feel. You know, there was a recent study done that showed that 1 teaspoon of refined sugar can induce cravings for 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks.
Wow, it's a long time.
That's amazing. Mm. When you start to look at addictive substances, and especially when you start looking at drugs like cocaine and things like that, imagine imagine how we would feel about sugar if our perception shifted from sugar being an illicit substance and we knew the effects of it. Like, oh, 1 teaspoon of sugar can give you cravings for 3 weeks. And they've got children, you know, in the supermarket aisle or in a shop. And we've all seen this. Some child just chuck a tantrum in the middle of the supermarket floor and the parents don't know what to do with themselves. Like, you can't have it. You can't have it. And they're like kicking around and screaming. And you see this quite often. Or, the child at home and they're really disobedient. They can't sit still and they've been labeled ADHD. But they're feeding them synthetic foods, they're feeding them sugars, and the poor child's just constantly just going up and down, energy levels through the roof, they can't focus, and then they crash, and then they're moody, and then they're sleeping. So just removing those refined products is one way that I think it's a necessity. If you want to have clarity, you need to remove those things completely. Caffeine's another one that's a little bit controversial because it can have beneficial effects on the mind. It can help give you a nice elevated mental state. And some people function really well with certain levels of caffeine. Other people don't do really well at all. As far as caffeine is concerned, I don't drink coffee. It's very acidic and has lots of carbon dioxide in it, which is what we breathe out. It's quite acidic as well. It's what we breathe out. But when you roast a coffee bean under high temperature and then you grind it and you put it under high pressure, and then you pump boiling water through it, or close to boiling water, and you get that beautiful crema that's so indicative of a good coffee. That's carbon dioxide that's been emulsified. So I look at that, and I don't see it as having many health benefits whatsoever. But as far as a balanced mind is concerned, you need to really find out within yourself how that works for you. I found initially I just stopped having coffee after midday because it's a very yang food. Caffeine's a very yang substance. It gives you a real boost of energy, and coffee itself is very heating to the body. So it's good to, it's okay if you let that give you a boost, but if you can use that energy in the right way. So if you've got an active morning, you've got a lot of exercise, and you've got a very busy day, and you can churn that energy out, great. But if you're drinking it and you're going and sitting at the office or something like that, you've got this energy charging through your body and you don't have an outlet for it, and that can create a real imbalance in the mind as well. You can start to get agitated, and you've got people that chew their nails or fiddle around with papers, or they just can't think straight. And then when you get to the 3 o'clock crash, if you don't have a balanced lifestyle and good enough nutrition to support you, is you need that pick-me-up to get you back on track. And this is where the caffeine sugar cycle begins. People will reach out for something sweet. In a lot of the cases, it's like a little pastry or, toast with something sweet on it or something like that, and you get this sugar spike. But then again, that will drop you as well, and you end up in this cycle where you wake up in the morning and you're groggy, and you're like, oh, I need a coffee. And then that's when the cycle continues to perpetuate itself. And one thing that I was really conscious of when I was moving through that phase of being dependent on stimulants was if I couldn't get out of bed and generate my own energy, then I knew that something was wrong. So I would always get up and make sure that I could generate my own energy through movement, through exercise, through meditation, through anything. I could start to generate my own energy and fully function. And then when I went to have a coffee or a tea, I was doing it because I enjoyed it, not because I needed it. So I think that's something to be aware of. Start to find out, are you relying on things to get you going in the day? If so, then that's not sustainable because that's drawing energy from your reserve tanks without you generating the energy yourself. And that only goes so far before you burn out And if you've ever had adrenal fatigue or anything like that, you can't think. You feel exhausted. You can't generate your own energy. You can't function. You're an emotional wreck. It's really tough space to be in, and it takes a long time to repair. And I've seen it happen over and over and over again, and I've experienced it. It's not fun. So catch those warning signs. If you are someone that does drink something like coffee and you really feel like you need that ritual of some sort of stimulating beverage, I recommend looking into traditional Oriental teas and the way that they make them. Because tea itself, not many people know, but all tea comes from the one plant, Camellia sinensis. Green tea, black tea, red tea, all of it, it's all from the same plant. And the difference between that and coffee, what I found, is two things. The way it's processed, it's processed in a very traditional fermentation method, if it is fermented, where natural microbes accumulate on it. You get things like oolong teas and black teas and these pu'er teas, which are really good for digestion and things like that. But also the way that it's prepared. It's not pressurized in any way at all. It's not burnt or roasted so that it becomes black and like has this carbon dioxide kind of smell and aroma coming off it. It's treated very delicately. And what also happens is, although tea has caffeine as well, it also has what's called L-theanine, another chemical. And what this does is, while the caffeine releases this stimulating effect on the body, the L-theanine instates a meditative, calm-like state in the mind. So it's creating this balanced outcome and this balanced effect, whereas what I find with caffeine, it's very yang. It's very go, go, go. If you've ever drank coffee and then tried to meditate, it doesn't work very well. But you can drink tea and you can sit quite calmly. And this is why in traditional Chinese culture, they have these amazing sayings. And one of them is, when you're tired, drink tea. When you're awake, drink tea. When you're hungry, drink tea. When you're full, drink tea. And I can't remember what the other one is. But basically, all they're saying is there's always a time for tea, because it has this balanced yin and yang polarity and effect on the body and mind. And since drinking traditional Chinese tea for, 7 or 8 years now, I definitely feel the difference. You know, I can sit and drink tea for hours and feel really calm, really productive, sleep really well in the night, wake up under my own steam, and I feel great. I don't feel dependent or anything like that. And the other thing is, the majority of it is water. So the tea is brewed with water. It's, you're basically drinking water with a little bit of tea in it, as opposed to, lots of coffee oils and milks and all these things that go in the other beverage. So sorry to come across as being anti-coffee. I'm not.
No, just, not at all.
Just sharing from a perspective of balancing the mind. I think that's enough to cover. There's quite a few things. Oh, look, just quickly we'll touch on the gut-brain connection, which is a big topic. But for balancing the mind, keeping the mind in a state where you have clarity and you can make decisions that are quick and effective and in alignment with who you truly are, I think keeping the gut in a healthy state is really, really important. And again, high fiber, high water content, plant-based foods are going to be the best way to do that. If you are a meat eater, which I do from time to time, and I know a lot of people do, and I'm not against meat eating by any chance, try and eat meats that are, that are easy to digest. So your slow-cooked meats, your braises, the secondary cuts that have lots of the fats and the connective tissues that when you eat them, it's really soft, not these steaks and these fillets where you chew and chew and chew and then it takes days for your body to digest and it clogs up the digestive system. As far as grains and breads and things, keep them limited, because we do know that, gluten has very profound effects on the mind, has very profound effects on the digestive system and the actual intestinal lining, where it can actually create tears in the digestive lining. And it can also fog up the mind. There is a direct connection between the gut and the brain through the vagus nerve. And there's also been a lot of research done lately to show that we actually have three brains. One is the brain in our head. We have a brain in our heart, and we have a brain in our gut, in that solar plexus area. And what they've found is that these brains in the heart and in the gut actually have as much neural activity, so neurological connections and electrical impulses and information being passed around, that's in a cat's brain. And you look at a cat, and a cat is very capable and functional in the world. It can do quite a lot. They can learn, they can communicate, you know, they're very instinctual, they're very adaptable to the environment. So when you think that we have the intelligence of a cat in our gut and in our heart, we start to realize that we do have more than one brain, and we do have more than one way of perceiving the world and making decisions. And this is why we have these sayings that are always passed down to us, you know, follow your heart, trust your gut, gut instinct, go with your gut, you know, those sort of things that have a real meaning. And the foods that we put in there, if they're not supporting a healthy gut system, or they're not supporting a healthy functioning of the gut, they can affect the way that you think and the way that you feel dramatically. There's so much information out there now, and I recommend looking into that. If anyone's interested in that, just start Googling and you'll find a lot of information. I'll start with Dr. Perlmutter's books. He's got two great books out, and they're all about the effects of gluten on the digestive system and grains, and the beneficial effects of bacteria in our body and in our digestive system. So they're great books to start with, and then there's so much more out there on the gut-brain connection. So, I hope that kind of sheds a little bit of light on how we can kind of balance the mind out and to kind of keep us in that middle state of clarity through what we eat on a daily basis.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of people don't understand or aren't aware or haven't been told that, you know, nutrition does play such a big part in how we think and how we feel. And like I said before, you know, I was a counsellor for many years, and that's not an area we sort of went into or learnt anything about. But over the years of holistic health coaching, it's something now I'm able to go into. And just by, you know, removing gluten, for example, or removing dairy or something that's inflammatory to their body, you know, can release some stress or make them more capable of dealing with stress, or, you know, reduce some of that anxiety. Even by taking away a coffee in the afternoon, you know, anxiety levels just come down dramatically. So, understanding the relationship between them all and knowing that it can either be a vicious cycle or it can bring the mind and the body back into balance, you know, is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's a really, it's fantastic because people directly perceive it themselves. You know, it's not information based, and they're not hanging in there like, oh, they're telling me this is going to happen. You know, if they stop eating gluten, you know, in most cases, I mean, some people can tolerate it, but I believe that some people can tolerate it, but some people can do many things that other people can't. But I think generally, if people start to remove things like gluten, or if they're having anxiety, you know, they start looking in ways of introducing things that are beneficial for calming the nervous system and supporting the adrenals and generating deep energy within the body, as opposed to stimulating in that way, they directly feel it. And I experienced this when I was struggling with my anxiety and panic attacks and all those sorts of things. Was as soon as I started to eliminate you know, coffee or some of these substances, I had an immediate change in the way I felt and the way I thought. And no one had to tell me anything. I'm just like, oh, I know that's good for me. I know that's not good for me. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts you can get. If someone can guide you to a space where you can have that direct perception yourself, then I think that's what we need to be teaching people. People to be holistic, like what you're doing, Bianca, with the holistic health coaching, is you're guiding people to essentially be their own, I don't want to use the word doctor, you know, be their own, just be responsible for their own state of being.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what sets us apart from so many others. But also, it can be quite hard to explain to people what you do, because they're sort of like, okay, so what can you do for me, and what do I need to follow, and do you give me this, and this? And it's like, well, only if you need it, you know. It's all about understanding you and your body and what it needs, rather than sort of saying, okay, this is what I do for everybody. And, you know, that's where their growth occurs. But, yeah, it's definitely something that's becoming a little bit more known, I guess, these days, and understood. But yeah, as you said, you know, you grow up and it's all about, you know, do this, don't do that. Whereas, you know, for us, it's just looking at the person. It's like, okay, so what do you actually need? Because you, that could be incredibly different to the person beside you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think this is the challenge of the natural therapist and the holistic wellness coach or holistic health practitioner, is that you're teaching people general principles of health and wellness, which is all we really need, I believe. Whereas there are so many specialities out there, specialties, and, you know, people need to realize is that, you know, we know we're fed information or we're delivered information in a way that says this does this, you know, cause and effect, or, you know, this has been proven to do this, or this drug has been proven to medicate this problem, or, you know, this kind of thing. And the reason why we have that in the modern paradigm of Western medical research and science is that in order to create any kind of scientifically or medically acceptable and accredited study, you have to have enough finances to back a study that is going to be credible. And for a study to be credible, it has to be double blind, peer reviewed, randomized, placebo controlled. And there may even be one more variable there, but that's a very expensive, very extensive study. With control groups and all sorts of things like that. And the average person or even the average business does not have the funds to back something like that. So you start to ask the question, if I'm going to back a study and it's going to cost me $10 million to create this study to prove something, I'm going to want something in return. So why would somebody, I mean, I wouldn't, but if I had that kind of money, I'd like to do something that would offer empowerment to people. But a lot of businesses out there, if their primary focus is financial growth and sustainability of their business, which is their right to have, like a pharmaceutical company, why would they put $10 million or $100 million into researching the effects of ginger if at the end of the day you're going to prove that ginger creates circulation, it's anti-inflammatory, it supports digestion, and then everybody in the world knows, oh, I just need to eat ginger. But you don't get any return on that because you can't patent ginger. So why would you do that? So what you do is you find out what the active constituents are in ginger. You create a medicine or a drug that's exclusive to you, and then you patent it. You give it a funny name like Thermoxygingenil or something along those names, and then you can prove that your drug has some effect, and then you get your return because you're the only person that can say that, and you're the only person that gets the funds that are, but you're the only person that gets the return on that. So this is what we need to realize with the holistic healthcare practitioners. We're not teaching people this is going to fix this. We're teaching you, you can fix yourself. You just need to understand natural health principles. You need to understand how nature works and how you can work with nature and principles of health and rejuvenation until you get to a point that you can naturally flow through life. You know, and the medical system is there for a reason. Like if you have an accident or, you know, trauma or you car accident, sure, you know, I mean, they do an amazing job there. But as far as chronic illness and those sorts of things and creating balance within a human's body and life, I think that there are lots of other beneficial practices like the ones we're talking about, especially with food and self-awareness, that can have much greater benefits.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, any symptom we have is, you know, telling us something is out of balance in our body. And quite often it's, you know, there's something advertised on TV, so it's easy to go and try that and see if that's going to work. But as we, as holistic health practitioners, we teach the foundations of health and, you know, what we've known for thousands of years as well. Whereas science is just, you know, bringing out these new things. It's why not look at what we've known for thousands of years and get back to basics and let our own body do the healing rather than relying on an external source to do the job for us?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, if you look at the word symptom too, it just means it's a sign and a signal that something's happening. So, you know, it's like, you know, you get a rash on your skin and, you know, you go down to the pharmacy and they'll give you a cream to make the rash go away. But what if the rash wasn't anything to do with your skin? What if, you know, what if the skin is the largest organ on the body and it's one of the largest forms of detoxification? So one of the ways to get a toxin or an offense out of the body is to push it out through the skin and give you a temporary discomfort of redness, you know, or itchiness because you've got certain toxins or some sort of something that's coming out through that part of your skin, you know, related to those organs or those energy systems. So by suppressing it, you're pushing it back into the system that's trying to get rid of it. So if you do that enough times, if you keep suppressing these symptoms enough times, what happens is they get stuck in the body. And that's when you start to get deep chronic illness. And the body has to find ways to deal with that, and they're not as pleasant. You have people that turn up with all sorts of illnesses and cancers and things like that, where the body is creating containment around large amounts of toxins in the body just because they haven't supported the natural processes, or they haven't followed the, the feedback, the biofeedback the body's giving you. So, it's a very interesting topic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we could talk forever about it.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah. Well, Simon, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today and sharing your incredible knowledge and wisdom. I've absolutely loved it. I'm sure all the listeners have learnt lots today and, you know, can start incorporating whole foods into their diets, but it's really important to know why they should do that. And I feel like, you know, from the podcast today, they would have a really good understanding of why it's important to have whole foods and, you know, get in touch with nature and listen to their bodies and know what their body is saying and also what their body needs. So thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Bianca. It's been great being on here. And if anyone can take anything away from this is, just to make sure that they do tune into their bodies. Try and find real food as much as you can in your life, you know. Be gentle with yourself if you don't have a natural food-based diet, you know, but just look from a point of inclusion. Start to bring good things in, and when you start to feel that true nourishment, all the things that you don't need just start to fall away. So thanks again for having me on here. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No worries. And how can our listeners find out more about your Conscious Kitchen and any upcoming live events and workshops that you might have going on?
Sure. So I've taken advantage of the Facebook platform. I wasn't the biggest fan for a while, but you can find everything that I do on there. Your Conscious Kitchen is my Facebook page. I'll often post what I call life-changing recipes and I share information on upcoming events, workshops, online programs, and personalized coaching that I can offer as well around whole foods. So you can catch me on there, and if you just shoot through a message, I always get back to them.
Perfect. And you're based in Sydney and you also do workshops and events outside of Sydney.
That's right, yeah. I'm based on the North Shore of Sydney, but I do workshops up and down the coast and around Australia. So.
Beautiful. Thanks, Simon. I love your work and, yeah, thank you again.
Thanks, Bianca.
Cheers. Bye. So there you go, guys. Nutrition is just one foundation principle of health that I highly value in my own life and that I coach my clients on. So stay tuned for upcoming podcasts, either presented by myself or with my exciting guests. So we'll be covering the remaining foundation principles of health and also a whole variety of topics. So if you have any requests, please let me know. If you'd like to know more about my health, wellness and lifestyle coaching, or you would just like to contact me about anything that we've talked about today, you can find my details at www.biancadaly, which is biancadaly-healthwellness.com.